Welcome back. Afternoons Live, KFIV, KWSX, iHeartRadio, Wednesday. Little segment we like to call American History 101. Moment when we take a look at an applicable and important element occurring in American history that I think you need to know about. You want to join us this afternoon, 565-DAVE, 565-3283. It's also the text machine number. You can email us at davediamondshow@clearchannel.com. Check us out online at KFIV1360.com.
Beef, it's what's for dinner.
It does have that kind of sound to it.
Yeah.
When I first started this segment, I thought this would be the perfect thing for it, but now I'm not so sure. Now I think I might need to find something.
I like it.
I do like it. I'm just not sure it. Just not sure it's perfect.
Too beefy.
Yeah. Because you almost expect that. You almost expect, what's that guy's name? Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
Beef. It's what Americans eat. It's what real Americans eat.
I love Sam Elliott, man.
Everybody loves Sam Elliott. Awesome. Roger says National Geographic. Yeah, it does kind of have that feel to it. Today in 1780, May 29th, 1780, an occurrence in the American Revolution that has an interesting effect on the American Revolution, and yet virtually unknown to Americans today. It's like we just forgot about it. And I'm not sure why. We shouldn't have. The movie The Patriot, I don't know if you've seen Mel Gibson's movie The Patriot, is actually based on what happened.
Oh, yeah?
On this day in 1780. That doesn't tell the story exactly, but it's kind of based on that whole thing. The British were defeated, of course, at Saratoga in 1777, and so they came up with this new idea. Well, we're kind of at a standstill here in the North, and we keep losing important battles. And the problem with fighting important battles is that if you win them, they don't really gain us anything. But if we lose them, we look like idiots in front of the entire world.
Right.
We look like we're losing the war, and we can't have that. So they came up with this new strategy.
Surely their red uniforms had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I'm sure. So they come up with a new strategy, John, which was, let's come from the South. Let's take over the South, which, by the way, was where the Tory support, the Loyalist support for the king, was strongest anyway. And conquer the South, and then kind of use the South as the base to drive north through Virginia and into New York, and put an end to this here rebellion, as they refer to it. And so they kicked off that strategy, and it actually was working quite well. Charleston had been surrendered by Benjamin Lincoln. He surrendered Charleston to the British, and they began to push inland along the way. Well, this, of course, had the predicted effect. The Loyalists, the Tories of the area, began to join with Cornwallis's army. They began to join with that, and they began to actually form their own units, because for a while there, it looked like this was going to work. And at the same time, John, it attracted a great deal of response from the Patriots, the Americans who looked at this and went, well, you know, so far we hear Southerners haven't been a real big part of this. Maybe now it's time for us to get involved. And so they began to show up to enlist and join their local militia companies. The problem was, of course, that because we were now, you know, 3-4 years into the war, where they were just now starting to show up, there really wasn't a whole lot of training. So Washington's idea was, well, let's send some officers down there to kind of run things. But officers really, and I've said this on numerous occasions, are only as good as the people underneath them. I don't care how good of a general you are, if your privates aren't up to the job, you're not going to win. It's a fact.
Right. So they just sent people down there to kind of lead this ragtag band.
That was the general idea.
And didn't really send like a unit down there to train them.
They didn't send
any
soldiers down there because, again, they're all militias, and they didn't want to. There was a distinct reality in American fighting mentality, which was you stayed within your militia group, and your militia group didn't necessarily get sent where it couldn't be supported by your state, and that was important. And really, that even affected into the Civil War, where you had units, particularly Southern units that were in the Army of Northern Virginia, that felt like they didn't sign on to invade Maryland and invade Pennsylvania, and so they stayed home. It was not unusual to see that kind of thing happen. They did send some leaders down there. A guy by the name of Buford, who went down to the North Carolina area. He was put in charge of a group of North Carolina militia, some Virginia Light Dragoons, cavalry troops that had escaped from Charleston. they began to kind of retreat in the swamp areas over there, and the British were not real happy about this and found out what was going on, and so sent out their troops, particularly under a guy by the name of Lieutenant Colonel Banastre Tarleton. He had a force of about 270 men. He was commanded the British Legion, which was primarily loyalists, and he took off in pursuit of this guy named Buford, who was the northern officer in charge of these southern troops. On May 28th, Tarleton reached Camden, set off in pursuit around midnight the next morning, and by that afternoon, his advance force had made contact with the other group, and the fighting began. Now, again, you've got all this British cavalry, and you've got Americans who are just not ready for the fight. And we don't like to hear, this is a part of the war we don't like to hear. We don't like to hear that, you know, our southern men and men were not up to muster here. They just weren't good.
Right.
And as the British approached, Buford made a huge mistake, which is that he waited until you could see the whites of their eyes. He waited until they were about 10 yards away before he fired his first volley at the British. Now, you think to yourself, well, shouldn't that have really been a good thing?
But, right, because you're more likely to hit him.
That's the theory, but you're talking about bullets, and you're talking about marksmen who are, even the best of marksmen in that era, were not good by our standards today. I mean, they just weren't. You know, if Cal Shooting Sports could teach them, Tyler and his boys could teach them a lot, because they were not hitting, for the most part, center mass. I mean, you had a gun that wasn't rifled.
Well, see, that's what I was going to say, is that it had more to do with the hardware, I'm sure. I mean, you've got people who have been practicing with these weapons.
But these men were not prepared for this. They were not prepared for combat. Right. And there's a huge difference. There was a huge difference between shooting at a rabbit and shooting at a British soldier who's coming at you, possibly on horseback, possibly not. So they waited until the last second, fired the first round, which gave them no time to reload, no time to move a second rank up.
So anybody that was still alive,
it was one volley and that was it.
Yeah, and then they're getting bayoneted or whatever.
And they're getting knocked down, and that's exactly what happened. The British hit their lines, and of course, the Americans not sure what to happen. And as I've said, we don't want to think about this, but what ended up happening is that the Americans basically threw their weapons down and surrendered. Said, nope, that's it, we give up. But in one of those little accidents of history that so often change the day, Colonel Tarleton, who was the British commander, had ended up falling off his horse somehow or another. And no one is sure how, nor exactly sure when he fell off the horse. And the problem was is that he is off his horse as Buford is seeing what's happening with his men and wanting to prevent a slaughter, puts up the white flag and says, that's it. We got to save lives here. We're going to surrender because we don't need this to turn into slaughter.
So the point is Tarleton doesn't see it.
Tarleton doesn't see it. But his troops see him fall off the horse as the Americans are raising the white flag. And they immediately assume that they raise the white flag as a ruse to target their commander. And they go into a berserk mode and begin to slaughter the American patriots there, who have laid down their arms and are not fighting.
Oh, dude.
Tarleton, to his credit, tries somewhat to stop this, but not real hard to stop this. He is known for being a hardliner against the Americans. He does not like them. He wants to destroy them. And so even though he knows as a military person this is bad, he doesn't really rein in his troops like he could have. Right. He sort of allows it to go on. And eventually he could have done a much better, but it was, look, I fell off my horse. Right. I was busy. I was preoccupied with something else.
So he's got plausible deniability.
He certainly does. At the end of it, 100 American casualties are 113 men killed, 147 wounded and released on patrol. They also lost their two cannons, their 26 wagons. The British lost, now again, 113 Americans killed, 5 British killed. Ugh. 147 of ours wounded, 12 wounded on their side, 11 horses killed and 19 horses wounded. It was an absolute rout. But now you have this massacre on top of it. And the British accounts of this battle do not mention seeing the white flag. They, to this day, the British will tell you that the Americans did not try to surrender. The Americans, of course, continue to say, yeah, we did. And this
yeah, we did. Incident, we were getting our butts kicked.
Yeah. This little incident would go down in history as the Tarleton's massacre. It would go down as the Waxhaw massacre, Buford's massacre. And it would really have a cause to galvanize the Southern patriots and the Northern patriots to a lesser degree. But certainly the Southerners looked at it and went, hey,
right,
that ain't going to happen again.
Hell no.
That, no. And Tarleton really became their target.
Their boogeyman.
Their guy that, yeah, they were going to get him one way or another. And a few weeks later, this happened, it happened in May 29th. Some weeks later, in September, October, the North Carolina militia, in other words, all the relatives of these 147 dead guys, managed to catch this loyalist army at a little place called Kings Mountain in North Carolina. And as the loyalists tried to surrender because they were surrounded and beaten, the Patriots yelled at them, Tarleton's quarter, Tarleton's quarter, and just kept firing.
Which means we're giving you the same quarter that was given us.
Exactly.
Wow.
And they just kept firing away. And that's what point where the American Revolution really degenerated into what had up until that point been kind of a typical European gentleman's war.
Right, yeah. I was going to say, kind of a gentlemanly affair.
But at that point, it kind of went in the tank. At that point, it kind of became, whoa, these guys are not just going to give up. They're not just going to go away. They're not going to surrender. And, of course, as we know, the Cornwallis eventually, things not going his way in the South, made his way out of the South north to a little place called Yorktown in Virginia, where he got cornered by Washington and ended up surrendering. And you could make a reasonable argument that it was Tarleton's little faux pas there that galvanized and hardened the South against them. Because up until that point, the South had been either neutral or leaning pro-Crown. But that really took it out, especially from North Carolina. Now, I've told you this to some degree before, but it does have a personal connection to me. This happened on May 29th, and it was just a few days later that my great-grandfather, Charles, enlisted as he reached age in the North Carolina militia and was at Kings Mountain.
In the South.
That happened.
Interesting. Yeah.
So it's one of those days you look at.
So it's very possible that he enlisted because of this event.
It's very possible.
Wow.
Don't know that because he was illiterate and didn't write and didn't leave any records.
Right.
But if
this was, you know, a significant battle for the reason that you stated.
And it was.
It stands to reason that would have been, you know, a main.
It's one of those things I look at in history and, you know, you play that game all the time. 10 people or 5 people you'd invite to dinner.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you my grandfather, my great-great-great-great-grandfather would be on that list because I want to know why. I want to know what happened.
Right.
I want to know what they did. I want to know why they did it. And you read stuff like this, and again, it's an element that we don't like to think about, the fact that we lost a lot of battles in the American Revolution. We don't think in those terms. Hey, look at us. We rebelled against the king. We threw him out. But the truth is, it was not an easy fight. And it took Tarleton's massacre, his loss of command control, if you will, to really galvanize the country together entirely, North and South, against the crown. And really begin the task of ending the American Revolution.
Yeah.
You got to wonder, what if he hadn't fallen off his horse? What if he hadn't allowed his men to go on that rampage? But these are the little things that history turns on. And that's what happened on this day in 1780 near Lancaster, South Carolina, between Abraham Buford and a loyalist force led by Colonel Tarleton, Lieutenant Colonel Tarleton. The massacre at Waxhaws, which led to the defeat at Kings Mountain. It's great stuff, but that's what that. And if you want to get a feel for it, Mel Gibson's The Patriot is loosely based on this incident.
On what happened today?
Tarleton's incident. Loosely based. It's not, again, it's Mel Gibson, so
right.
Not going to be exact, but it'll give you a good flavor for what happened that day. It's Afternoons Live, KFIV, KWSX, and that is American History 101. Trap. All right, see, I understand the argument that we shouldn't do American History 101 on Wednesdays because they're wild and whimsical. But the problem is that they're usually tied to that date.
Right, right. So my assessment of that is screw you, Roger.
Other than that, it's a valid
I do point. What I want.
Right. Well, that's not quite what
We're
I said.
We're a grown-ass show.
what's Orange and Sleep 6? A Caltrans van?
That's actually kind of funny. I mean, even though it's from Jeff.
Right. So is the one at the bottom, but I can't read that one on the
right.
I didn't realize that I noted said that. So yet another thing that I didn't know I said. I did notice this, John. I was cruising around during the top of the hour break, and I noticed that because we work during these breaks. Just so everybody's clear, we don't just sit here and, you know, drink coffee or, in fact, we very rarely move. Right?
Right. Well, that's true. I mean, I don't go anywhere. I'm always paranoid that I'm going to miss something important.
Right. But I did notice during the top of the hour break that I can watch The Bachelor online.
Can you?
I can.
Okay.
I'm assuming it's not live online.
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so.
But according to this, I can watch The Bachelor episode, the entire episode, and catch up on what's going on.
It's like a two-hour epic, dude. Well, the first one was.
You know what I'll do is I'll I don't feel like I have to watch the whole thing.
Right.
I can just kind of fast forward to people getting out of the limousine.
Yeah, that is kind of what I would do because there's definitely like a big kind of lead up into that because the girl that's the Bachelorette was one of the girls on The Bachelor, the right. season that, you know.
Well, I kind of want to meet her because I don't know anything about her. So whatever section. So you'll need to text me and let me know, you know, skip this part.
She's
skip
a cutie,
that part.
Man. She's
well, they all are.
No, they're not. She was one of like maybe three or four totally normal ones.
Oh.
Or relatively normal
ones. Rest of them were insane or?
Dude, there's some seriously crazy craziness going on there for sure.
That's really the only way they could make that a show, isn't it? I mean, if you just had normal, because normal people would not go on a show where, hey, how'd you like to be on a TV show where you might end up married to
right.
somebody?
Well, yeah, and that's kind of a good point because I you almost got to wonder if maybe they just kind of say to him like, hey, just so you know, we're gonna basically populate the show with 20 crazy people and 5 normal people,
right?
And your job will be to weed out all the crazy people. Slowly, though. Not too fast.
Right. Don't do it all fast.
And you'll have
once.
To get rid of at least one good person before their time.
Yeah.
You know? Kind of how it works, though, because it's the way they lay the thing out, I don't know. I mean, they leave kind of, you know, for instance, they go in sort of a, when they do the eliminations.
Right.
They keep everybody that you would expect them to keep. They keep them first. And then there's people that you kind of like, but you're like, oh, man, I know she's kind of on the fence about that dude or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they save that. They kind of draw that out like, oh, are they going to keep him? Is he going to get a rose? You know? It's a little over the top.
Hmm.
It's a reality show. I mean, do you want? You know, they have
in the back of my mind
that they have to go with.
In the back of my mind, I know it's all fake because the producers are like, well, you should come in with a shovel and a bloody sack
and there was one chick on the Bachelor that I was just like, man, they gotta be telling him he has to keep this girl. They gotta be telling him that, and they assured the because a lot of people apparently thought that, they assured the viewers right. that no such thing takes place and that the dude really was just kind of bamboozled by her.
And then we find out later on, of course, you know, 3 years from now when he writes his tell-all book,
maybe. You know, but the other thing that you got to keep in mind is that, like, he or, you know, whomever the Bachelor / Bachelorette is not privy to the private conversations that happen between the other contestants.
Okay.
When they're not there. So you, last season, got to see this one chick just completely unravel. And he didn't. All he ever saw was what she chose to show him.
Right.
And he kept getting all these conflicting reports from other girls about, like, oh, no, she's not... She's not
so they,
anything like
oh,
you
so
think
they can
she
gossip.
Is. Oh, totally.
See that? Okay, I'm in now.
Yeah, political intrigue and backbiting galore, man. It's like the only difference between this and Game of Thrones is, well, there's really a lot. There's no killing.
And, okay. No kings, no thrones.
No killing, no nudity. Really no thrones.
Right.
Plenty of games, but mostly of the mind variety.
I think I'm in on this one. So Denise says, I must have really been drunk. I don't remember you guys doing work during the breaks. Denise, on that particular day, our job during those breaks was to drink.
That's
and
correct.
And as I recall, we did, in fact, work during those breaks.
Right.
By drinking.
I mean, usually, yeah. Usually, Dave and I are just hives of activity here during the breaks. You know,
But that's why we bring Marshall
in on that day. I'm here surrounded by my massive computers and, you know, this my news center, if you will, just, you know, keep, you know, monitoring things. And Dave does the same. And
right.
We have the text machine going at all times.
Or I forget to do the logs and have to go back and do those during the breaks. But yeah, on that day we bring Marshall in and he does all that crap.
That's right, because we know that we'll be inebriated.
And that becomes our job. Our job is to drink. So you did, in fact, see us working.
That's right.
Diligently.
That's right, Denise.
So there. All right. Next text, 565 Dave, 565.
Keep him coming.
3283. So we had a big earthquake on the 25th. We had a couple of big earthquakes now, from what I understand, on the 25th. David Nabham is going to join us after the bottom of the hour break. He's the guy we had back on April 9th. And earthquakepredictions.com, I believe, is the name of the website. We'll talk to him in just a moment. Stay with us. So it was April 9th, John, when we had David Nabhan on the show. David is the author of Earthquake Predictors, Answers in Plain Sight. You can find it on the web at earthquakepredictors.com.
Right.
Or on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com. And we're talking about the fact that the next day was one of those days that was heavily weighted.
Right.
Nothing happened.
Right.
But at the time, he said,
well, here's other days. Yeah.
And as it turned out... He was spot on. Dave's good afternoon. Welcome back to the show. Glad to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I've been reading some of your Facebook posts. They're pretty hilarious. I appreciate the follow-up.
Right. We had actually talked about, remember the story we did about the Iranians saying that the problem with earthquakes were caused by women dressed as harlots?
Yes.
I sent that to Dave and said, what do you think of this theory? And he responded that. So... Listen, one of your things in your book, and it's one of the things I really appreciate in your book, is it is not what I've come to describe as voodoo science. You have a theory, a hypothesis. You've put the data out there. You've said, here, everybody, look at my data. Don't take me at face value. Test it for yourself and see. And one of the dates that you had said look for was May 25th. And, of course, here in California, we had a fairly significant earthquake in Northern California. And then on the Kamchatka Peninsula, we had an 8-plus earthquake at virtually the same time on the same date. That's got to make you feel fairly confident in your ideas here.
Well, I'd like to tell you I was surprised. I wasn't. The last quake that size to evidence itself on the West Coast was the 6.3 quake off San Diego last December 13th, 5 months ago. And that was the previous near syzygy perigee date, the one of six for 2012 that... also received tremendous press coverage prior to the event all over the world. That was missed by 5 hours, so, and calculated and published 3 years ago. So I wasn't surprised. I won't be surprised on June 23 or July 22 as this plays out. I was listening a little earlier, and you quite rightly, you know, pointed out that this isn't voodoo and there's no Houdini and the trappings of a circus magic act should really be put to one side. The people of this matter is really in the hands of the people of Modesto and Stockton. A 45 second, if they were to take 45 seconds, they might change. They might do something that would impinge changing the history of California by dropping an email to the governor's office. I know you were in the Navy and this. This chain of command, I'm more or less insulating myself from it. It's not my business to go to the governor or to talk to USGS, but the people of the state of California are having a dialogue with the governor right now, and daily emails arrive in Sacramento from people from all over the world who basically have heard me on the air or have seen what just happened and what happened in December last year, and this has been going on for many, many years. Millions of people have seen these events take place on the air, so this is for the people of the state of California to determine one way or the other for themselves.
It's pretty amazing stuff, and I've read the books, and I've looked at the data that's there, and I'm fairly convinced. I'm not a geologist, and I'm not a physicist, but it makes sense to me. So let's kind of walk people through the general outline of what you're saying we should be looking at here.
Well, I sent you the data, and I sent those journalists, and, you know, and you used to talk about Kamchatka. The same thing happened. I was on the air in Missouri, and, boy, you talk about the show-me state. I know that you're a hard nut to crack. I appreciate that about you. I like skeptical people. I don't like people that just jump on board, because this is a tough call to make. There was a swarm of earthquakes that took place also in Missouri. So there's you saw the journalist that I sent to you on that was attached to the data. But the data that you were looking at that I have not sent to USGS, it's basically the stunning history of how these quakes, the same quake that struck in the way the quake struck in Susanville, can be evidenced going all the way back to the 1933 quake in Long Beach. When you look at the history of Southern California, when you look at the history of the West Coast, actually, all the way from Anchorage up and down, there is a tremendous number of quakes that have struck in these thin, thin time windows that it is absolutely implausible to expect to have happened due to coincidence. And it's based on gravitational tides. You take a look at all the great quakes, Long Beach, Gorman, Sylmar, Whittier, Sierra Madre, Northridge, all the quakes that have killed people in Southern California all took place at dawn and at dusk during new and full moons, during syzygy dates, near syzygy dates, basically where the sun and the moon were lined up in such a way as to exert the maximum tidal pressure on the fault line. So you talk about 265 people killed over a 70-year period, and every single one of them killed at dawn or at dusk in Los Angeles. That's an outrageously improbable, you know, that can't happen on this planet. That's not the way math works. And you saw the math in the book. It's basically, you know, it's not California. It's 1 out of 10,000, basically.
Yeah, it's fairly rare. As you go beyond California, though, you've made the statement before, it becomes a little bit less obvious. But with the Kamchatka event, you kind of look at this and go, well, it makes sense. It's on that ring of fire. It's almost, you know, the opposite side of the world. It would kind of make sense to see that happen, wouldn't it?
Well, the evidence worldwide is worldwide, and it's a century and a half long. It starts in 1845, and if your listeners were to go to the NASA Harvard Astrophysics database, type in NASA Harvard, put in tidal triggering of earthquakes in their search engine, you will see 250 peer-reviewed articles from all around the world that say exactly what you just said. So, but I mean, I can't offer too much. I've got people who listen to every single syllable that I say, and I have to be conservative. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Right, and that's part of the problem with it. I read a book this past week, Dave, called Voodoo Science, and it's a really good book. But it kind of taught me to be conservative in my thought process. And that's one of the things I do appreciate. And I'll tell my listeners that your book is not a fantastic, hey, it's not, you know, the Mayan apocalypse. This date is the world's going to end. It's here is a series of events that occurs on a fairly predictable basis. And look what happens when that happens. It's basically looking at the evidence. And I do appreciate that.
Well, and that's true. And, so at this point here, you know, I can keep making these interviews, and I'll be speaking in San Diego next week. But I go back to where I was, where I started. This matter, rather than just being a magic trick, the training wheels are off, as far as I'm concerned. When the next month, especially, there's going to be a peer-reviewed paper that's going to be published. It's going to make big news. It's going to set off a fight. The old guard always goes down swinging hard, and they burn bridges. And they, you know, there's going to be a bare knuckle fight. And I expect that sort of thing to be the same here. So I will certainly putting this method in the hands of the governor won't happen unless people in Modesto and Los Angeles and Oakland and Eureka go to earthquakepredictors.com, and not to support me, but to send an email to the governor saying that they're now aware of this matter being discussed in public, and that it's their opinion, that if they so think so, that the prudent idea would be to weigh this and to find, you know, put it in the hands of a body of experts who could determine yes, no, or maybe.
And assuming that it works out, yes, and that's an assumption, but to just say, I mean, how hard is it to be a little bit extra prepared on those days for an earthquake?
Hard at all.
It shouldn't be that hard. So that's really what you're looking for. You're really looking for people to just take this information, judge it for themselves, and then say to our governor of the state of California, which is a earthquake-prone area, say, hey, pay attention. Let's look at this. Let's get together. I mean, we're spending God only knows how much money on strip clubs and everything else. we can take a little bit of that and kind of look into this and go, is it worth the extra effort to be prepared on those days? It's not that hard.
Well, you know, Dave, my vision sees the very near future examining these dynamics, and it's this could be the first baby step towards slowly but surely crafting advisories which could prudently be delivered. I'm going to say something. I'm going to go out on a limb here. The next great episode on the Southern San Andreas is going to happen very soon. It's going to happen, in my view, before 2020. It's going to be a monumental event for Greater Los Angeles, and a stupid, cowardly, simple-minded way of looking the other way is one way to do it. Or we could address this as, you know, we could discuss the matter. We could discuss it as sane adults. William Wilberforce, a British abolitionist of the 1850s, said, "You can look the other way, but you can never again say that you didn't know." Well, the people of Modesto and Stockton know now. There is something that civic-minded and patriotic people can do. It would require 45 seconds of their time.
And it's well worth it. That's 45 seconds in the email. Read the book, though. It's worth it. Check it out online. It's earthquakepredictors.com. The book is, I think, it's $2, $3 on Amazon.com. It's not real deep. You know, I mean, it's not a bunch of scientific stuff that you won't understand. It's written for folks to understand. It's a great book, Dave, and I appreciate you coming back, and I'm of two minds here. I hope we have you back on the 24th, and I kind of hope we don't. You know what I mean?
I said June 22 and July 23 at dawn and or dusk, meaning between 4 and 8 a.m. and or p.m. And my hope is that there is a big earthquake. It's big enough to shake the people of California in such a way as to cause them to move on this matter, not to cause any damage, not to cause any injuries, but big enough to wake people up and to cause everybody to ask the very simple question, how can people who live in a seismically active zone not have a seismic advisory like the people of Japan and China and Russia and all the other industrialized nations on Earth have? So,
especially when it seems so evident.
Yeah, I don't wish any ill on California, but it would be this empirical evidence would be helpful to move this enterprise forward.
I certainly would. David Napham, he's a very interesting fellow, folks. Check him out online at earthquakepredictors.com and get his book, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Dave, great to talk to you again. We'll talk to you, I would guess, in about a month and a half, if not sooner.
Thanks again, David. Right. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it very much. Score to Till, 565 Dave. Stay with us. Back right after this. Live, KFIV, KWSX, everywhere, via the iHeartRadio. Wednesday episode. It's fascinating stuff, John, and it's a little unnerving in a way. I mean,
yeah.
I've spent my whole life terrified of earthquakes because you can't see them coming. You can't predict them. In fact, my dad and I were having this same conversation on Saturday about, you know, my dad's from Oklahoma, and we're talking about the fact that, you know, couple of Oklahoma boys out here in California, and we'd almost rather be back home with the tornadoes. At least you can see them coming, and you can take cover. Dude. But that's
earthquakes. I mean, the last really, really big one was in like 1987, dude.
89,
whatever.
Well, actually, wasn't the Northridge quake after that?
Yeah, but it wasn't that big a deal.
Well, it was to the 50 people that died. The freeway that collapsed, wasn't it?
Oh, well, okay. Well, yeah.
The motorcycle cop that...
Yes, that wasn't good, but okay. You know what I mean. For the most part, earthquakes are not generally taking people out.
Right.
Or really even causing all that much property damage.
As soon as the one hit, now, I guess, I'm told, I didn't feel the one the other day on the 25th.
No, I didn't either.
I didn't feel it, but I immediately had people texting me saying, "Did you feel that? Did you feel that? Did you feel that?" I saw it all
over Facebook. I didn't feel anything.
And
I never feel them anymore.
You wonder if people really did feel it or if they just think they did. And all the time I've been here since 1998, I've only actually felt one. And I didn't so much feel that as hear the building that I was in move.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I mean, the building made a sound saying. That it didn't normally make.
I've definitely felt them before, but generally you have to be like sitting still.
Right. So I don't know if people... I don't know if it becomes better, but it is intriguing to me. And it's in a state where earthquakes are a huge deal. It would not be that big a deal to send a message to the governor and say, you know what? Maybe we ought to look at this. And that book I read, I haven't sent you that book yet, have I? Voodoo Science. Fantastic book, John. And it's very old. It's probably, I don't know, at least 15 years old. But it's really good.
Cool.
And it's just caused me to look at things. And I wasn't blowing smoke up Dave's ass. He wrote a science book. It's not a earthquake prediction is easy. Sign up here and you'll know when the next one. It's not that.
Well, he's never really come off that way
either. He comes across as a scientist, and that's what I appreciate. That's why I have him back. If he come across as, you know, you're all going to die on May 25th, I think we'd had a problem with that. But yeah, the 1989 World Series earthquake. It, true, but there was one in Southern California, and I don't remember when that was, the Northridge quake.
Yeah.
And I don't I remember that one because my brother was on patrol during that quake. And anyway, the point being that I don't know. I'm glad we're in kind of a seismically stable area. He said questioningly because he's not really sure anymore if we are or not. I don't know. I mean, if we had that big of an earthquake in Southern Cal, I would imagine we'd feel something up here, right? If we had an 8 or 9 down in L.A., we'd probably feel something.
Yeah, eventually I would think.
As it rolls through. Not looking forward to that. Anyway, it's a fascinating book. Earthquakepredictors.com, and you can get the book on Amazon for like $3. I mean, if you've got a Kindle or a Nook or whatever, it's those are the kind of books I like. Because you download them for like, and this Voodoo Science book I got for like $1.99. It was on sale.
That's cool.
And it's just really good. John, he talks about all kinds of. Well, you know what he really did, and I don't know if I really want to get into this today. He coalesced my thoughts. I get in trouble for this all the time, and Cray Hagen will probably send me a text about, no, we didn't. You know how I feel about aliens.
Right.
He crystallized in my mind why I think that way, because the science doesn't support it. And it was like, well, yeah, when you think about it that way, it makes sense why we're not going to go to Mars. It's just not going to happen. I mean, the idea that, and I read it the day that the guys came back from the space station, the International Space Station.
Right.
And if you saw the picture of them, they're sitting on the ground under blankets. You know why they're sitting on the ground under blankets? Because they can't stand up after having been in the space station for 3, 4, 5 months.
Yeah, because your muscles atrophy.
So there's things there that are, to be considered. And it's a very good book. Voodoo Science. Don't ask me the guy's name. I've forgotten what it was off the top of my head. I got my Kindles right there, but I don't want to turn it on right now. So
that's far.
There is that.
You hear that, people. Dave hates people's dreams.
I would love to go to Mars. I'd volunteer to go if it was reasonable. It's not reasonable.
I'm just twisting your nugget, man.
Twisting my words. Story time was rad. You should do it more often. You know, I don't think of it as story time, but okay. I'll take that. Tony was texting the text machine. I think Mayor Bloomberg outraged as amount of ricin sent to him more than 16 ounces.
Yeah.
But Mazzy and I were arguing earlier today about how big is a cup of coffee. He had a story that 4 cups of coffee is the perfect amount. You get all the health benefits and none of the.
I was talking about that earlier today, right. Too. Yeah. But, so it's like 4 cups of coffee. But are they talking about like a cup as in 8 ounces? Or are they saying just like,
I don't know,
a cup that's your cup?
I don't know. Because my cups are way bigger than that back in 60. Well, John, that wraps up a Wednesday. Went fast. About anybody else, but seems like we've covered a lot of ground today. Tomorrow, of course, we got Constitution Thursday. We're going to be looking at Article 2, Section 1. Still, one of the more interesting sections, I guess, and given the circumstances of current eligibility for president. Who's eligible to be president, John? That's where we are.
I'm not going to be here that day.
That's where we are, so we kind of have to go into it. Plus a few other things, depending on how deep we get into that and
right.
See where that is. And then on Friday, we got Fun with News, of course, and Top 5 Guilty Pleasures. What is it you love to do, but you're not really want everybody else to know? Text your list, 565-DAVE. Email it, DaveDiamondShow@clearchannel.com. Or give us a call after the show, 565-DAVE, and just leave a voicemail with that on there. And here's the cool part. You don't even have to give us your real name so that nobody will actually know that Chaffer and Jeff really loves romance novels.
Bodice rippers, if you will.
I don't know that for a fact. I just made that up.
No, so he does.
Maybe. That may not be true. Or it may be true. You'll have to tune in Friday to find out. Thanks again to Dave Nabhan for being here. And to each and every one of you for being a part of the show today. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. I'm Dave. That's John. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. And we will see you tomorrow for a Constitution Thursday episode of Afternoons Live on KFIV 1360 AM Modesto, KWSX 1280 AM Stockton, everywhere via iHeartRadio. Stay tuned. Rusty Humphries is next on the flagship, K5. A little bit later on KWSX, we got Stockton Ports Baseball. Stay tuned for that. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great night.
Afternoons Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for Clear Channel Media and Entertainment Modesto.